Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Hang. This week we have actor-artist Josh Davis. Now, Josh and I are meeting for the first time on The Hang. I saw Josh actually saw him when he was in the original cast of Beautiful the Musical, but I just recently saw him in Paradise Square. I was blown away by the numerous characters he played in the ensemble. He was very engaging, very captivating, and I just wanted to pick his brain as an artist and how he goes about creating such nuanced work. So I hope you enjoy the podcast as much as I did. He's a great, great artist. All right, Josh Davis.
Hey.
Am I saying that right, Josh Davis or Davies?
Josh Davis.
Josh Davis, welcome to The Hang. It's
Thanks.
A pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Mate, I saw you in Paradise Square.
Okay.
And I remember watching you in that, and I was fascinated as an actor watching that. I was just like, this guy, because you came on first as a character with, there's like three of you.
We're all in the first opening scene, but yeah. There's too much going on in the beginning.
But when you
and
came
then there were
on,
three of us, yeah, like the yep. Uptown Men.
What was that one character you played there?
I don't think he had a name. Well, you know what's funny? It was me and...
I know you probably gave him a name.
We all gave him names. Yeah. Me and Ben, Ben Michael, who was played the other guy, we would always like create names on the way out there and, you know... Just have a good time.
I'm telling you what, that came across. So then I remember watching going, that guy's super interesting. And then I saw you come out as another part. Because how many characters did you play in that? Maybe eight?
Six or seven. Well, I guess, yeah, with the other big ensemble, I guess,
yeah.
Like seven or eight.
And I thought, this guy's got something brewing in every scene. There's something going on. He's keeping himself in it, but also for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know I saw it earlier on. And I remember I DM'd you after. I said, I couldn't take my eyes off you, but it was, I kept trying to tell myself, because I'm still trying to improve as an actor. You're always trying to improve, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of think, you want to serve the story, so you don't want to pull focus. You want to serve the story. So it's like finding that balance, because you want to be in it. And it's great that I'm noticing you, but I always felt like you were serving the atmosphere, you were serving the scene.
Yeah. It's a fine line between...
it is, but...
You know, and I'm sure I've crossed it many times, you know. You have to cross it in order to learn.
I feel like we might have been cut from the same cloth, because we always tend to always go a bit too far, but hopefully we have enough self-check to go, actually, yeah. I'll bring it back.
Well, I think that's why I got into acting initially. It was because I liked doing that. I always felt comfortable, like, on stage. In high school was, like, my first time. I played sports in, like, middle school and stuff, but right. I never... there was something about, like, the parents yelling at... on the sidelines that like interfered with my focus.
Yeah.
And so I was always like kind of intimidated. I liked playing, but I was not good because I was like running down with the ball or dribbling with the ball and parents are like yelling, shoot it. And I was like, I was taking my attention away.
I
realized, you know, ADD and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, growing up in the 80s, I didn't really realize what was going on. And obviously, But I found like I loved singing in high school, and I sang in all the choirs and stuff. And then I took my first drama class, and I remember I was in West Side Story was like my first time I was on stage in a play. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a calm come over me, like when the lights hit me. It was like I was able to focus. And I was kind of like a little class clown, like a lot mm-hmm. of actors are. But it was the first time where I really felt like I could focus and I could like do what I wanted to and get a response. But it wasn't like some random people yelling at me. It was like,
right.
I can influence someone that way.
Oh, that's amazing. So I want to then carry on from there, but just to stay in the Paradise Square moment, how much... I feel like the laugh has...
We could do a couple shows on Paradise Square. I'm sure you know.
But I'm not here for tea. There's enough podcast people out there who like just look for gossip bullshit, but I want to get to your artistry. Sure. Was that up? Did you have a freedom to kind of come up with every moment? Yeah. Have those actors?
Yeah, totally. We did the Out of Town in Chicago, mm-hmm. and it had been done in prior to the pandemic in Berkeley. So I wasn't part of that.
Okay.
But this opportunity came along and they needed somebody who could play a bunch of different characters, like a, clown type character. And I had done that in another show in New York, and it was, and that was good because I could play a bunch of different characters because I've always seen myself as like a character actor. And because Moises Kaufman, who was directing it, was really focused on, and they were developing the story. And like when you're developing the story, like the directors think of a billion different things.
Correct.
And they don't always have time to think of like the peripheral characters. I mean, they'll focus on your scene and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you as the actor kind of have to help them along. Be like, what about this? What about this? And so I had a lot of
free reign.
Or you
just do
it. Well, yeah, that's what, yeah, exactly. I did it. I just did it.
Well, you have to.
And then he was like, no, don't do that to police.
Are you good by being told rein it in?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like, how dare you? Thwart my creativity. No, I'm fine.
I like
with
to
that.
Know my boundaries, but then if I'm not told anything, I'll push until I'm told otherwise.
Yeah. And I did that a couple of times.
Yeah, but sure, that's okay.
But it's fine.
It's with the best intention.
Yeah.
It's because you care.
It all serves a story too.
Yeah.
Because with a story that you're developing, like something with Paradise Square was such a big story, and there were so many storylines and plot lines, that there isn't time for like the creatives to kind of be like, you do this and you do that. So you have to, as an actor, kind of come up with ideas. And like, so all of us in that big first scene, like we're in that in the Paradise Square saloon, mm-hmm. We all had character names. Like that was one of the things we came up with. We all created like a character.
Yeah.
And people had different characters depending on what scene was going on. And sometimes I actually had lines and I was like, oh, you're the guy who delivers the bad news.
Right.
And sometimes I was just like, just say these lines. And so you have to create something to give yourself some kind of world to live in.
Yeah.
Like, why am I even here?
Mate, and that was evident. And you bring on that sort of history, that vibration, whatever it is, that serves the overall piece, that serves, you're like pitching it back to where the story is.
Yeah, thank you.
That's how I took it. And I really enjoyed that. And I remember at one point, like, I think there was that for one of maybe the first dance offs or someone was dancing and you're up there smoking, but still having a boogie as well. I was like, he's... But you were feeding off what you were watching, which then would bring my attention back down to where the story is.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, because you can't, you as an actor, okay, if I'm looking this way, the audience is kind of going to see me, but they're going to, I'm looking towards where the action is.
But you were still living in that
atmosphere. I was living in the moment, yeah. Well, because the other thing about that show is like, it's a super heavy dance show.
Yeah.
And I'm not a dancer. Like, I'm a solid double threat.
And so, hey, listen, you were giving it some, you were breaking some shapes up there.
Well, we worked a lot on, so the cool thing about that show was like, there was like African influence and then there was Irish step influence. And that was the idea of like, I mean, the basic plot of that, those two worlds merging together.
Yeah.
And so I got to work a little bit with Chloe Davis and with Garrett and Jason on like the different types of dancing. And I was like, I was watching all the super awesome dancers that were there and I was trying to learn stuff. But it was very apparent. It was like, I would have been able to do it eventually, but it would have taken me a long time.
Right.
And also just the strength to build up for like Irish step in your ankles is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. Like the kind of strength and dexterity they have. So like I learned a couple little things, but enough to like kind of mosey on up there.
Right.
But the funny thing was like whenever there was a dance going on, I was up on the top somewhere floating around. And I got more comfortable with like moving. And so I just sort of, it was different every single night. So
that's great, man. It keeps yourself interested and it keeps things vibrating and to keep the story fresh. And you were, again, I saw you serving the piece, which I found amazing. Because, as you say, it was such a big production. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
And you want to know, you want to feel the environment, feel the sort of time, but also where's the story? Where's the focus we want to be at? And it's a shame it closed. You know, it was such a big undertaking. And I know, you know, you hear stories about what you guys must have experienced backstage and be, you know, stuff that we shouldn't be privy to. But it's a shame to see it close, you know.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talent that...
There was. And there was a lot of heart in it, too. I mean, I think that's kind of what got us through, honestly.
100%.
It was like, I've been in shows where it's like, yeah, we're a family, but like, we're just having a good time. But this was, I don't know. It's like, people say it's like a family. It's kind of more than a family. It's like family you can leave. Like, I wanted to be there with them. I love my family, too. But it's like, when you're working with people and you're kind of going through some emotional, like, difficult drama, you really kind of pull together. And with a show like that, that's about difficult drama, it was like, you obviously want to have the drama on stage and not off the stage. But in a situation like that, like, you kind of pull together and it made us a stronger company.
Oh man, what a shame to see that disband.
And it was a beautiful show too. Like, I wish that more people had been able to see it, and maybe someday the soundtrack will come out, but who knows.
Has that still not come out yet?
No, that hasn't come out.
Oh, there's a story there.
I mean, we haven't been paid for it. I'm okay saying it, you know. The producer hasn't paid the musicians and the actors. And so it sits, you know, in a hard drive with, you know, the incredible music director who wrote the music.
Are people looking into that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're looking into
it. Well, let's hope it comes out.
But I'd love to see it. It's amazing. Like, the music is incredible.
And I really thought maybe there would have been a corner turn with all your nominations, but...
Yeah.
What a shame, man.
Yeah.
Well,
but it was a good experience. So
good.
Met some good people.
So let's rewind. So you mentioned you were into sports, but you didn't like that sort of vocal sort of encouragement from the sidelines, which I get. Like, one of my buddies I work out with, I'm very quiet. And I like to, as you say, zone into a moment in silence and get through it. So let's say a bench press and I'm like struggling. He will be loud. I'm like, come on, you can do it. And I'm like, shut up. I was in a zone. It was coming. Now you're drawing attention this way.
Right. Yeah. Some people feed off of that.
Yeah. You
know,
I don't.
Some actors feed off of that. And I just wasn't that kind of person, you know?
No, not anymore. Like, if I was in a contact sports and like American football or ice hockey, yeah, fine. Because there's so much going on and there's a lot of us on, like, it's a team sport, but a solo thing.
Yeah.
I just want to zone in and have my own thing, you know?
Yeah.
Or just whisper, say, you got this, buddy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So you said you, with West Side Story, you found something that you really were passionate about and you liked that feedback after
I loved it. It was great. I could focus and I could pretend and, you know, and it was okay. It was a safe place to be like that. And I remember, like, the first time I got applause, it was the end of the show. I was playing Baby John. And it was actually a huge production. It was like two high schools came together for the first time to do this, like, 50 or 60, you know, kid, student production. And I just got this, like, rush. It was just a rush, you know. It was like doing a drug for the first time, or, like, you know, it was crazy.
And is this high school?
This is high school. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so I did all the choir and madrigals and a cappella group and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing was, like, no one in my family was an actor, and I didn't really know too many actors. My English teacher's son was like an actor in college,
right.
But I didn't really know actual professional actors. And so I didn't, and I was also very, like, later on, I figured I had like ADHD, but I was a little all over the place. And so I didn't necessarily have the focus when people were like, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to do this. Being an actor, like, was very intimidating to me because it was easy for someone to be like, here, audition for this play and do this. But when it was left up to me to do it, I just didn't have the confidence to do it. And so I ended up going to business school. I went to University of Delaware and I went to business school. And all I wanted to really do was be in an a cappella group.
Because really?
Because I like my girlfriend at the time was a little older than me and she went to UVA. And I went down to visit her once and she was, I forgot the name of that. It was like the Bells or the something or other. But the Tufts Beelzebubs, I don't know if you knew who they are, but they're like this incredible a cappella group at the time. And they did songs like off the radio. They took like Peter Gabriel songs and Pearl Jam, and like it's like 15 person like percussion. It was like super awesome.
Wow.
And I just was like, that's what I want to do. And so when I got into school, like, I looked for an a cappella group and eventually found like this. I auditioned for one and didn't get in, thank God. And I found this other one that was like It's called the Hen Harmonics. And it was a bunch of like chemical engineers who were like to sing.
Right.
And so I like sang with them. We became good friends. And then we killed that group and created another group called the Y-Chromes, all male acapella. And that was like my fraternity. That was like my fraternity in college. Weird thing was I ended up living with a bunch of guys in college who were in a fraternity. And I ended up joining that fraternity out of pressure because right. they, so I lived with like the president and the rush chair and the vice president and the treasurer of this fraternity. And they wanted me to rush it when I was like a junior or a senior or something like that, because they wanted me to compete in the Greek God competition, which was like a talent contest.
Right.
And because they knew I sang. And so I ended up like rushing as like a junior or something. And I was rushing with a bunch of like, okay,
when you say rushing, that's
so like a fraternity when you pledge to be in a fraternity. Yeah, you right, go through okay. like a rush period.
The only thing I know about fraternities is what I see probably in films like Old School.
Yeah,
with
it's
Will
exactly
Ferrell.
Like that. It's like, you know, it's actually very similar to that.
Okay,
at least from what I was in the I went to college in the 90s. So yeah, you like go through this, you know, period of like, are you good enough to be on the, you know, in our group?
Really?
And oh yeah, it's crazy. So and it's stupid.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You have to prove yourself with this talent competition?
No, I had gotten in by that point. So I like did the whole rush thing. I'm like getting yelled at and like, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Really?
Oh yeah, of course.
Did you have to like chug a keg of beer at one point?
I was not a huge drinker in college. But there was like that
okay.
atmosphere.
Okay.
It was there if you wanted to do it.
All right. Okay.
But my fraternity actually was relatively cool. They never forced you to drink anything.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. It was, they were responsible. at least when I was there. But so anyway, I rushed and then I did compete in the Greek God competition and, I sang Kiss of the Spider Woman, which is funny cause it's like a couple thousand like fraternity people and people were like, you know, playing a guitar or like hitting the drums, and I come out in like a tuxedo and like a red spotlight and like sooner or later, you know, people are like, what the fuck is this? And I won. So
holy that, crap.
You know, when you sing like Kiss of the Spider Woman and you know,
it's a great song though.
It was great. Yeah. I did one musical in college and it was, And the World Goes Around. And so I played that character.
Right.
And, so I knew that, you know, I knew the song.
If I was to do a YouTube search right now,
yeah,
are we going to find that?
Oh man, I can't find it because it was before, it was 1990 when I graduated in 97. So it was like 96 probably. So it was before, it's somewhere out there. Cause I know they record it. It might be on like a VHS tape or something like that.
So you got your business degree?
I got my business degree. Yeah. And then I moved to New York for like 5 or 6 months. Worked at a restaurant and, went to work at a casting company. I met like some random guy in like a restaurant and turned out to be like a big casting company down in the West Village. Mm-hmm. And so that was really cool. And kind of got like a taste for like watching actors come in and like do their thing. And
did you take this job just because it was a job to make money? You're still thinking?
I was not being paid for that. That was like free. I was a PA. I was an intern. For that, I was working at a restaurant to make money.
Right,
and it was it was Time Cafe. Do you know Time Cafe? Yeah. It was on Lafayette. Like this was like 97. This was like a cool place down on like Lafayette and like just north of the Village, I guess, like right around, like just south of Astor Square. And I was just talking to this one guy who would like come in frequently. I guess he lived in the area, and so he was one of the junior casting directors. So anyway, I worked there for like 6 months or 5 months, and like it was awesome. Like I met tons of people and got to watch. I was there, so they cast. What was it? There were two scripts on the grounds: Cider House Rules and Shakespeare in Love.
All right,
and they did a bunch of Miramax stuff at the time, so that's a whole other story. But so I got to watch Gwyneth Paltrow audition Ralph Fiennes. Is that his name? Ralph Fiennes.
Well, Joseph.
Joseph Fiennes. Yeah, that's right. Because he was flying to England that night to go to his brother's thing. He's like, oh, Ralph, that's his name. Ralph always gets all the parts, and he was auditioning for this thing. So it was cool. Just, I mean, she had already had it, but it was just cool to like be in it and like to see the how it all works. And then I was like, I don't know what to do. And so,
did you take this, I guess, internship at this casting place because of your interest in acting, or you just thought?
I loved movies, and I just thought I wanted to be in the world at some point. At one point I thought I wanted to be an agent. Cause that one's like Michael Ovitz was like the big name in Hollywood at the time.
Right.
And I just thought that was super cool. And, I didn't know, cause I didn't go to acting school. I just didn't know how to be an actor. Like I went to business school. So I was like, I know how to get a job. I can go in, you know, I didn't know how to really audition. I didn't know how to pursue acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also, I was a marketing major, so I was interested in advertising and creativity, that aspect. And so when my lease was up, cause it was just like a short summer thing. I moved back home to Maryland where I'm from, and got a job at an ad agency in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, it was pretty boring. I hated it, but I loved talking to the creatives and the producers who like made the commercials and stuff. And I had taken an editing class in college, like a digital editing class. I mean, now we can do it on our phones, but at the time it was like this huge thing called an Avid. And it was like in a suite, this room, and they had fired their editor, and they were doing everything out of house. So I kind of knew how to work it. So I would stay after work, and I taught myself how to use this machine. Sometimes I like sleep on the couch and like have my buddy wake me up in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, just like sleep over at work. Cause I just liked editing. And again, it was like, if I could do something and I was into it, like I could hyper focus on it.
Right.
If it was something I was not interested in, I just didn't do it. So eventually I started editing some stuff for the producers and not doing what I was hired to do, and I got let go. But I, because I had that editing, I knew somebody who knew somebody who needed a job to hire somebody for like at a production company down in DC. And so I went to work for them, and we did stuff for Discovery Channel and for the Washington Capitals and the Wizards.
Right.
And so we did like all the in-house video for them. And then my job was to write a show called Science Live, which was on the digital networks of Discovery Channel at the time. And me and this other guy, Chris, who became one of my best friends, we would alternate. So I would get like 20 episodes of like ants, tornadoes, avalanches.
Right.
That's all it said. And I had to come up with a show. And it was like a structured like, I'd say Larry King, but that's a while ago. Basically like an interview show, kind of like this, but like the host would have a scientist on.
Right.
Be like, oh, we're talking about avalanches. Like, how do avalanches get made? Or like, what's the science behind avalanches? What are we doing to stop it? You know, all that kind of stuff. And it was really cool because I could then learn, I was super into science, so I could like learn about this stuff and then get B-roll, which is like the, you know, if you were to take pictures of this and then layer it over this conversation, that would be B-roll. And it was really awesome. I did that for like a year and a half. And I also got to shoot video for the Washington Capitals and the Wizards. So that was like part of our job. So I learned how to shoot camera, how to light interviews, learned how to edit more. And I was having a great time. And this was pre-9/11. But I was still like singing. I was like driving about an hour to work every day. And I was like singing Les Mis in the car and all that stuff. And I was still in the back of my head. And a couple times we had to like shoot some like little scenes for the B-roll, and I would like act in the scenes and stuff and have a good time. And so through a series of unfortunate events, I got fired from that job.
No.
So really quick, I had a couple friends from college, and this was when Michael Jordan was playing for the Wizards. And my job was to like sit on the court and just shoot Michael Jordan and then take that tape, because it was not digital, it was in a beta cam, give that to somebody, and then they would send that out to the news reels around town and be like, this is what Michael Jordan did today.
So you were courtside for Michael Jordan.
I was courtside with Michael
Jordan. Amazing.
And it's amazing, but it's kind of lost on me because I was like, I appreciate Michael Jordan, but I was not a fan of right. like basketball and stuff. But I was like, it's Michael Jordan. But my friends who came to the game were big fans. And one of them was moving. He had just got married. He was moving down in North Carolina. So I got the media passes from somebody I knew at the, it's not called the MCI Center now, whatever it's called. And I got them so they could come in early and watch the players like warm up and stuff. Right. So they were right ringside or courtside. And afterwards I was like, I have to go into the locker rooms to do interviews with the players. I just like sit there with my camera as they're being interviewed. I'll come get you guys later. But I told my one friend, I was like, I'm going to take you down as a gift, as like your wedding gift, and mm-hmm. take it. I took him into the locker room and he was right with me when Michael Jordan's getting interviewed and stuff. And, so this was right after 9/11 and, like in November, and my boss came up to me. He's like, hey, two guys just tried to sneak into the locker room. They said that they were with our company. Do you know anything about that? Our company had like 12 people in it.
Right.
I was like, oh no, I don't know anything about that. And it turns out I like texted my friends and they're like, hey man, we tried to come see you, but
oh no,
super drunk. And like, so they got stopped and then took off. And so like after 9/11, like it yeah. was crazy.
Of course.
Security was crazy.
Understandable.
So they had like 40 security guards looking for my friends. They never found them, but like I eventually was like, yeah, those are my idiot friends. So I got let go.
No.
But it was the best thing that ever happened because so that was like in November. I took December off, basically December, January. And then I called a friend who was living in DC. I was living in right outside DC at the time. And she was an actor and she was like pretty successful theater actor. I said, I think I want to try acting. Like I've been like putting it off mm-hmm. for a while. And what do I do? And she's like, okay, go here and get these headshots and then take a class at the Studio Theater and then audition. And so that's what I did. I got my like black and white headshots and I took a class at the Studio Theater and I auditioned for, This Is Our Youth and got the understudy role for This Is Our Youth. It turned out this one actor was playing, it's like a 3-person show. The one mm-hmm. person who was playing, the part I played, I can't remember the character's name, but is this guy named John Bernthal, who's like a huge actor now.
Of course.
So he's like,
I love
just
the trajectory of his career.
Yeah. He's
after Walking Dead, what he did and the yeah. smart choice he made.
But he had gone to, I think like the Russian Theater Academy or something. So he had just, I guess, come back and he's from Maryland or something,
right.
maybe that area. And, he was doing that, but he ended up going out to Hollywood and in the middle of the run. So I got to do like the last week or so of the run. So that was the first time I did a play. Well, no, I did play in high school, but that was the first time I did a play where I was paid.
Right.
And I got the bug and I DC is cool because they have a whole bunch of theaters in the area and yeah. they have a thing called the League of Theater Auditions. You get like 90 seconds to audition for something. And I did that. And then,
did you have to take in your own, do they give you a piece?
Take in 90 seconds or whatever. I sang like, 16 bars or something and like did like a little monologue and then they're like, oh, come on, audition for us. So they kind of pick and choose
right,
who they
I
want.
See.
And then I got my equity card by auditioning for the Kennedy Center for like theater for young audiences and went on tour for like 6 months. And then I did a couple more shows in DC and then realized eventually that like, if I wanted to be an actor and support myself as an actor, cause I was working as a waiter, DC was not the place to do it. It's a great theater town.
Yeah.
But everyone I knew who was like a full-time actor had to have another job.
Right.
And I wanted to be like an actor
yeah.
who didn't need another job. I wanted to like survive on acting. So I moved to New York and became a waiter for 6 years. It was great.
Yeah. And so then what kicked it off for you over here?
I kind of like putzed around for a while. I went on my like equity, cattle call auditions and all that stuff. And I got a couple things here and there. And I had done the last 5 years in Baltimore and got an agent out of that. Some like an actor saw me and recommended me to someone and got.
You played Jamie?
Yeah. No, I played.
I don't know if it was like a cover or.
Oh no, I did. I played Jamie.
So yeah, that's a heck of a.
It was, I can't sing that high now.
That's a task.
Yeah. It was a big task. I lost my voice the day after as soon as they were like, okay, show's done, curtain's down. Show's over. It was like
your body just shuts down.
Yeah, it was gone. So Jason Robert Brown came to see the show because he was doing a concert that night, and I was like, "Do not tell me, don't tell me when he's here. I don't want to know." And like the way it was set up, like I was stage left, and the blue light comes on for me to like walk on, and somebody's like, "He's here. Good luck." Great, thanks. And but yeah, it was cool.
Oh man, that's a great part.
Yeah.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom? Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I just to kind of wrap that little thing up. So I moved up here in like 2004, and so all I really ever wanted to do was play Javert. Like that was my whole thing. I was like, if I could play Javert, then I'll move on to like a real job, because I had seen Les Mis when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. It was like the second show I'd ever seen, and I loved it. But I'd like Javert just stuck out to
that's
me
the
for
part,
some reason.
Man.
I was like, oh man, that's cool.
That's all I ever wanted to play.
You will someday. And so I was like, if I could just do it in a regional theater, whatever, that'd be great. And I ended up booking Les Mis in like 2007 or something out in Pioneer Theater, and I played Fu Yi. You mm-hmm. play Fuyi. And we had to lower it a little bit because I can't sing as high as Fuyi.
There were some days I'm like, oh, Lord, it's not going to come out.
Right. And I understudied Javert. And the actor, who was a man named Merwin Ford, was playing him. And I think Merwin, we figured out he was on tour when I saw him. I think he was the actor who I'd seen. Unfortunately, he's passed away.
Oh,
but
okay.
he was great. And he ended up, you know, and you're playing a principal role and you've got an understudy who's like really wants to go on,
and I have done this,
been like, I'm not feeling good. Maybe I'm not feeling good in like 2 weeks. Are your parents going to be in town? Cool.
Right.
I feel a cold coming on.
Yeah.
And not that I would ever do that, but, it's happened before.
Yeah,
and he did that
human,
for me.
And we have grace for people as well.
And so my parents were out and I got to go on for them. So I was like, oh man, that's it. I'm done. But then you get the bug more and you want to do it more.
Of course.
And so like a couple years went by, I like did some film stuff, like I produced some stuff and I was just doing regional stuff and I ended up like injuring my shoulder pretty bad. I was singing on cruises, like a guest entertainer, mm-hmm. doing like a Jersey Boys without the drama kind of thing.
Right.
And I injured my shoulder and I was kind of like, I was working, but I wasn't like working. I had not gotten on Broadway and that was like the next tier for me, I felt like. And then I got this audition while I was out doing Les Mis again at Pioneer. I was actually playing Javert out there. I got this audition for a show called Beautiful and sent my tape in and didn't hear anything back. And like 3 months went by and then I got a call and they're like, they want you to fly up and audition for, I was down in North Carolina doing Les Mis again. And, they want you to audition for this. And so it was like, right. So it was right down near Studio 54. And I auditioned for it and then I went back and I had to like send a couple more like tapes of me singing the song, You've Lost That Loving Feeling. And then I booked it and I didn't know, at the time I didn't understand like out of town and like what that process meant for mm-hmm. Broadway and how that all worked. So I was like, okay, I'm going out of town, but it might go to Broadway, but I haven't been told I'm going to Broadway. So the thing for me, because I sang my track sang You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
Yeah.
That was written by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil. And so that was their biggest hit. It was like, it's the biggest, like most played song of like the 20th century.
Yeah.
And so they had final approval on who got to sing the song. And so I like rehearsed and did the entire show and they came to see me on, I think the opening of our previews. And
this is the one with Jesse Mueller.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I had not been told, everybody else was going to Broadway. I had not got my contract yet. And so as I'm going up for the first preview, they had come the night before and the producers were like, I want to tell you, they were here last night. They really liked you. You're going to Broadway.
Oh, mate.
And it was really cool. It was pretty cool. I called my parents and we had a nice cry.
So, I love that.
So yeah, that was cool. And then we went to Broadway, 3 years on Broadway. I like had a job for 3 years. It was awesome. I took off to do some regional stuff. And then I booked Les Mis and did the tour for 3 years as Javert. And then left in, so I did the tour. I think what you were in Les Mis in like the
2014 and 15.
Yeah. So we were doing that at the same time. I was in Beautiful at the same time.
Yeah.
So you were doing that. And then I did some regional stuff in like 2016, and then 2017, I booked the national tour.
And you got your Javert.
I got my Javert. Yeah. I auditioned for Cameron and the whole thing.
Isn't that that's a process, eh?
Yeah. That was like six auditions. They're like, just come back in and sing it again. It's fine. He likes, just come back in and sing it again.
I don't know why they do that.
So yeah, it was crazy.
I remember I did that earlier in my career. I was like, but I'm doing the same thing. Right. Same people.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no
and
one
then
new.
I was like, you're doing it. And then like, you haven't gotten the contract, but now you're doing it with all different people. Like all the Valjeans, and like they want to see the energy between the two of you and stuff. But it was cool. It was like, so like for that, I did this, I wore the same thing each time. So I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, so they only see me as this,
yep.
Like in their mind. I like had this like dark vest and dark jacket and like, you know, darked it up. And this is like very, you know, I don't know. It was like, he said to me, he's like, I want you to be like a tiger. You're like, you're prowling. You're looking for him in the streets. So I was like, okay,
yeah,
can do that. And then, yeah, I got it and went on tour and for 3 years and came back. Left
3 years you toured with that show?
2017 to the end of 2019. So it was like half of 20. It was only like almost 3 years.
Jeez.
All of 2018, almost all of 2019 and like half of 2017.
Were they weekly stops or longer?
Mostly weekly, longer in like the big cities.
How did you maintain your health, your mental health, your voice?
Well, I had my dog with me too. So I had a pit bull who I travel with, which was insane.
But come on, that's the best thing to come back to. And you have a...
It was very nice to come back to. He's a lot. He needs a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
So I drove a lot of places and he could fly, but he, because he's very well behaved in public, but he needs a lot of exercise. And so there were, the thing with touring is like I love being in different cities. I love like eating different foods and stuff.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing was like remembering the backstage because the stage is the same. But as soon as you walk off stage, you're like, this wall wasn't here 4 days ago. and you're like remembering where your dressing room is. And it's kind of a blur, but it goes by quick. And so that's why I was like, God, it feels like just yesterday I was in Beautiful, but it's been a long time. Cause that was like, you know, and then the pandemic. So I came back in December. So I had done a bunch of musical theater and I was like, this is great. I'm having an awesome time. I want to do TV. I want to see what that world is like.
Mm-hmm.
And, I left in 2019 with the, you know, basically what I wanted to do was just audition for everything that's on TV, everything that's like film, not do any more musical theater, not sing at all. And then, you know, I moved in with my parents for a year.
Yeah, the pandemic, right?
Yeah. Came back up in 2021 and just started the audition again for whatever I could.
And how's that going now? Because I know it's still like, TV seems to be back on track now in film. Hopefully the strike doesn't happen that I'm hearing about.
I did Paradise Square, and that was a godsend, just to have a job again.
Yeah.
And to work with people and be back on stage. I mean, it was like when I walked back on the stage after the year and a half, it was just like,
I think
we all just
cried.
It was just great. But it was different, obviously, because we're all wearing masks and going, you know, testing and all that stuff. So I did Paradise Square, and that was, I had always had it in my mind that I was going to get back to TV and stuff. But after that experience, I was like, I'm going to do TV. That's all I'm going to. Well, because theater also just takes up so much time. You know, it's like it's your entire life.
Yep.
You know, you rehearse for 6 weeks and then you're in previews for weeks. And then you're like doing, like for you, you're probably doing a lot of PR when you were opening the show and stuff. And like, you're just, it's your entire life. And it's great, but you're only doing one thing.
Yeah.
And it's extremely fulfilling. But as artists, we do like to do other stuff. And I also just like the technical aspect of other, you know, TV and stuff. And I love working with other people. I love it because it's kind of like, you know, it's like in the military, which I've never been in the military, but I've got friends who have been in it and I've seen movies. And it's, you know, everybody has a specific job, you know, and it's like, that's your job. That's what you do. You're super good at that job. And that's kind of how it is in TV and film. It's like on a production set, like, you know, like, oh, that's the, everybody has a name,
right?
That's their job. And you can go to this person and that person helps that person. It's just so cool when it all comes together and like moving a set and all that stuff.
Right.
And I like acting with the camera because it's very different than acting with, the, you know, for the stage or for the people in the audience. And it's a challenge. and I really enjoy it. So since then, I just have been auditioning for TV and film, and I had a good end of the year last year. I shot 4 different TV shows at the end of the year last year.
So is that all through self-tapes to begin with?
Everything is self-tape. I've not been in an audition room since 2019, basically.
So let me pick your brain about self-taping.
Sure.
Because I need to improve at that.
Yeah.
So what do? You get your agent send you your size? Like you set up your backdrop?
Set up my backdrop. I actually painted my wall. I have an office, and I painted kind of an off color blue.
Right.
And I've, got my ring light and everything, and they send me the sides. And I'll sit down and I'll go through it and I'll see how many people are in the scene. So if it's one person, then you're just talking in one direction. If it's two people and it's a two-person scene, mm-hmm. You're picking teams. And so maybe one person's here, one person's here,
right.
If the camera, if you're the camera.
Yeah.
Basically what you want to try and do is let them know, let the director know and the producer know that one, you know what the scene is about. You know who's in the scene and you know kind of how to work with the camera. So if the camera's directly in front of me, I know this person and maybe that person has a line and might say something to this person. I might look over this person, So I give them reactions.
Yeah.
And you just play it like a scene. And you also, what I do is try to do it as an entire scene. So the hardest thing about self-taping is there's no editing.
No, because they're staring at your mug the whole time.
Right.
So how do you keep that interesting? Because some of these scenes, I've done scenes that are 4 minutes long. I'm like, They're just staring at my face for 4 minutes if they even watch it all.
Yeah. But so what you do is, what is film? It's just a bunch of photographs,
right?
It's all a bunch of pictures. So you just change the picture. I mean, that's not my, that's a cut. That's the, so JJ Perez is one of my teachers. Great, great guy. Kuleshov effect. Anyways, this Russian filmmaker, who way back in the day took a piece of film. And he would, I think he either had a picture of a guy. So I'd take a picture of you just looking at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a picture of a bowl of soup, right? And then a picture of a guy.
Okay.
And then he would take the same picture, not picture, but the same film, of the guy just staring. And a picture of picture of a dead baby. And the other one was beautiful woman, same guy, same dude, not doing anything different, same exact, clip, and then beautiful woman. And then he would show his audience, he says, what is this man thinking? And they'd be like, oh, he's grieving the loss of his child. Oh, he's really hungry. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's in love with that girl, right? And so that's editing. That dude wasn't doing anything different.
Correct.
It's the juxtaposition of the editing of the pictures. And so that's what they do in the editing room. So what do you do when you're auditioning is you change the picture, right? So maybe you are here and then, if you're shooting this, you change your eye line. You may do this.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're changing the picture. Just make it interesting. Maybe you're starting back here and then by the end you're up here because it's, you're making your point at the event of the scene.
Yeah.
And it's I learned all this stuff. I started taking classes again when I came back because I don't know what I'm doing.
What classes did you take?
I took the Bob Krakauer class, but I also took... And Bob's great.
Yeah.
I love Bob.
After the first day, don't you feel like, I'm a shit actor?
Yeah, I know nothing. Yeah, but it was great because it's nice. And it's, as actors, if you do a good job, everybody's like, you're amazing, you're great. But it's like, as people, we're like, I want to improve. Mm-hmm. Tell me what I can do better.
Oh, he let you know right away.
Yeah. They even tell you, I was like, I wasn't even doing a scene, Bob. He's like, oh, you're ugly. Walk better. But he's super smart, smart. And I work with JJ Perez, who's just he's a great, awesome guy. And he explained Kuleshov. I think that's what it's called. Kuleshov effect. And so that was it's actually very similar to Bob, but JJ gave me I like that technical kind of thing.
Mm.
And he kind of gave that to me. And so you work on different kinds of, different kinds of things. So if I say little, what are they called? What's the word? I can't remember. But so if I say to you, do you love me? And your answer is yes. I'll say, do you love me? And you say, yes.
Yes.
I say, do you love me?
Yes.
Do you love me?
Yes.
Great. Yes. Yes, exactly.
That was Meisner.
That was Meisner.
Answered from the back there from our producer.
Thank you. And so, but that's the idea is the change, right? Do you love me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's three different motions, three different behaviors, right? It's all behavior. And just try to make it interesting. I'm still trying to make it interesting, so we'll see. Yeah.
But then you do like how many takes? How do you decide which is the most interesting to you?
I send it to my, I'll do two or three takes. And I'll try not to like stop. Like if I mess up, I'll try to keep going.
Yeah.
Just so I can keep it, you know, moving through.
But that's also human. Sometimes you do trip over your words or.
Absolutely. And so I've sent ones that I like messed up on because it just seemed more natural.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I have to pause and think of the line, I'll just pause and think of the line, you know, because that's normal.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, that they want to see that. They want to see you as a person. And like, because the camera doesn't necessarily allow, you could be a character.
Well, I think the main word is behaving. Yeah. Rather, it's not acting, it's behaving.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, totally.
Interesting. Do you give, do you take students? Do you do,
I do
any of that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a bunch of students over the pandemic. I started teaching and a lot of like high school students who like went on to college. So I was helping with the auditions and stuff like that.
So if people want to hook up with you, how do they hook up with me? Is it Zoom? Is it in person?
Yeah, it's Zoom. I guess I could do it in person now, but like most, I have got students all over the country, so it can be, on Zoom.
How do they find you?
Josh D NYC on Instagram.
That's how I found you?
That's how you found me.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't you, when you go there, like people are like, oh, is this yours? Cause I have a lot of paint. I do.
Yeah.
I
you're an artist too, right?
Yeah. And so I,
do you a lot sell of those? Is that just for fun? Just,
I do sell them. Yeah. I do commissions. I sell them and stuff. Sometimes I give them away.
Oh, wow, man. Yeah. And some beautiful work you got.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Speaking of which, so where were you born?
Iran.
Okay, yeah. Cool. So I did a little thing just to thank you for having me on here.
Brother.
Do you know where that is?
Yeah. Oh my God.
So that's the tallest mountain it's a volcano in Iran. It's the tallest mountain in Iran. It's a Mount Damavand. Damavand.
That's stunning, man. So your watercolor.
It's a watercolor. Yeah.
Brother, I can't wait to share the boards with you. This is gorgeous, man.
Just a little thank you.
So that people can see your work on there as well.
Yeah, Josh D NYC.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we definitely can't wait to share the boards with you and you might have a new student on your hands.
Right. That'd be cool.
Thanks for coming on The Hang.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I've learned
it.
So much, and this won't be the last time. I hope you'll come back because I feel like there's so much more people can hear from you and I can learn from you.
Yeah, and I could absolutely have learned from you too. From watching.
All right, brother.
There, so thank
Maybe
you.
Maybe we'll do a Javert and Jean Valjean next
that
time.
That would be pretty awesome.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
All the best. It.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.